Ron and Anian.
Because you are the car doctor,
well,
and you do know everything about cars, I'm going to give you a pop quiz. You ready? When is a car not a car?
When it's a truck?
No, when it turns into a driveway.
Cha-da-ching.
The car doctor. The car doctor.
One of the things that amazes me is we still make cars with theft-proof radios. Why? Who's going to steal it?
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the car doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Do you know the first problem you're going to have with your car when things get back to normal and you're going to start driving it again? I do. I figured it out this week. It's going to be, I'm going to get a rash of rusty brake rotors and dead batteries. Have you been driving your car? You have to drive your car or your vehicle, your truck, whatever. You got to get out on the road. I know they're saying quarantine and stay at home, but you know, if you go out for a ride by yourself and maybe we'll promote marital harmony this way too. Get out for a ride by yourself and take a ride. I had to go to East Brunswick, New Jersey this week to pick up some car parts, and it was an absolute joy. What's normally an hour and 15-minute ride from North Jersey took all of 45, 47 minutes. And I wasn't even speeding. I was just, tra-la-ing. You ever tra-la while you drive? Tra-la-la-la-la. That kind of thing. And it was just great. It was great. It was just the roads are empty. But here's what I've noticed, okay? Besides the fact that there's nobody on the roads and the parking lots are all empty and the malls are all empty and so on, is the cars that are parked, look in between the spokes of the wheel if you can. If you're driving a late model anything, usually they've got wide open wheels now. And you'll see the brake rotor is starting to rust. I mean, we're into this 3 going on 4 weeks of being parked and sitting. And it's an issue. It's only going to get worse in time. And the easy way around that, and then, of course, if you don't drive the car for, they say 3 weeks is the sweet spot for a battery, especially on a modern electronic vehicle, such as you're all driving, that, it's really a problem. So, it's 3 weeks. The car doctor's writing your prescription. Get out and go for a ride. All right. If it's okay to be with family, and I think it's okay to be with family if you're quarantined with them at this point. You just don't want to be around new people. I think that's the way the concept of the quarantine is written. Then go out for a family ride. Take the road trip to nowhere that I always talk about and just enjoy the sights. But if you can get away by yourself, boy, that's even better. All right. And just see what's out there. And you'll be cleaning up your brakes. You'll be cleaning up your rotors. You'll be charging the battery. And you'll be, juicing the fluids in the vehicle. And, you'll end up with, you won't have to call your mechanic when this is done because this is likely to go on for another couple of 4 or 5 weeks. And, we'll get through this. We have patience, folks. And just something I observed. I'm just, I'm just sitting here thinking, what can I tell these people about their cars that, and let's face it, brakes today, 4 rotors on a vehicle, you could spend $600-$700. So, here's a way to save some bucks and, get out on the road and get some fresh air. It'll do your mind a world of good. Let's get on over and let's kick the garage doors open as we start things up this hour. Thanks for stopping by, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor at your service, by the way. Let's go over and talk to George in New Hampshire, 09 Toyota. George, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, Ron. Thanks for taking the call.
You're welcome.
As you said, I've got a 2009 Tacoma. I've got 189,000 miles on it.
Okay. Just wait for it. Wait for it, George. Just broken in, brother. Still going, right?
You got that right.
Yep.
These trucks are awesome.
Yep.
But after this fabulous New Hampshire winter that we always get, I had to do some front end work that was due. I put new struts on, new calipers, new rotors, new pads, stabilizer bushings, and end links. And after I got it all back together, all that is fine. But I have a howl in the front end. It's not causing any vibration in the wheel or in the pedals. and it seems to be in a range of between 35 and 50 miles an hour, coming down a slight grade. If I push in the clutch and let the engine, just go to idle, I can hear it, but I can't feel it. I got underneath the truck, and I checked the CV shaft on both sides, and the passenger side seems fine, no play at all. The only play I have in the driver's side is right where the CV shaft goes into the differential. And I've done some reading and looking at that, and I guess there's a needle bearing in there that has been a problem with Toyota. But I don't know if that's the problem or if I'm troubleshooting this wrong or if I should take a different approach.
Well, let's just back up a sec. This didn't happen till after the front end work.
That's what I'm thinking, but I had things rattling around up front. I had a strut that was leaking. I had, the stabilizer bushings were bad. And after everything got put back into, spec with new parts, that's when I really began to notice it.
Do you hear it if you're doing, if you get it to the sweet spot, George, where it's, 45 miles an hour trucking down the highway and you pop it into neutral and coast, does the noise go away?
It doesn't go away, but it decreases with ground speed.
Okay, so as you slow down, it slows down.
Yes.
So if you do 45 miles an hour, get to an a decline where your nose down, and it'll maintain 45 miles an hour, will the noise stay the same?
Yes, it does.
So then this is a speed sensitive noise.
Yes.
Okay. So if we put this vehicle, you're working on it yourself, I assume, if you could get it up on four jack stands and drive it at 45 miles an hour, would it make the noise with the wheels hanging off the ground?
Good question. I do have access to a lift, and I could do that.
Okay, because
I've never been comfortable with doing that, just, being a guy that works on his own stuff,
right?
I didn't know if that would be a safe thing to do.
We do it all the time. As long as you're
okay.
Secure on the lift. I've been doing that for 40 years. As long as you're secure on the lift, and obviously you got to be aware, your whatever lift you're going to borrow, hopefully they're going to explain it to you too. You've got to think a little different because now you've got all this moving mass, a half inch from your head if you're not careful. That drive shaft will put a real hole in your hat. You think the virus is going to get you. Wait to see what a drive shaft does to you. If you're careful and you're aware and you crawl around with a mechanic stethoscope, you got a mechanic stethoscope, George? I used to be able to speak English, but
okay.
It'll really help you pinpoint it. But what I'm most curious about is, does the noise go away or change pitch off the ground? That tells us that if the suspension, if the noise is gone, then it's somehow tied to strain and stress on the suspension, which is creating the howl. And then I'm going to think about dust shields on the back of brake rotor assemblies or heat shields on exhaust systems.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But if you can pin it down to where the noise happens up in the air, you'll be able to get up real close to that needle bearing on the half shaft and listen to it.
Mm-hmm.
And at least that will give you. Then the other thing I want to see is if you don't hear the noise at all, is it wind rushing through something?
Well, I thought of that. I don't have any accessory or bolt-ons other than a toolbox behind the cab.
Right.
It really, to me, it seems like it's coming from the front end. Well, one more thing, something I forgot. If I've gone through the motions of getting it up to speed, and then so I've had clear road, I saw the wheel back and forth. And if I pull the wheel to the right, the noise goes away. When I go back straight, it comes back.
Okay. Maybe we've got a bad wheel bearing.
Okay.
Maybe we've got a bad wheel bearing on this truck. Okay.
What can I do to, try to troubleshoot that from left to right? Because, I put it up and I've spun the wheels and I'm listening, but I don't hear anything.
That's
spinning them by hand.
That's an easy question. So you get it up in the air, all right?
Mm-hmm.
It used to be when I was a kid and dirt was invented and God was a teenager, that you could always say that a bad wheel bearing, if you turned left, it was the right front. If you turned right, it was the left front. Things seemed to be pretty normal back in those days. Now all that's been out the window for the past 20 years. So the easiest thing is up in the air, and you won't have to drive it at 40 or 45. Have somebody in the vehicle, and you listen from underneath and tell them, give me a slow accel, or give me, and I'll pick it out with a slow acceleration, just 0 to 15 or 20 miles an hour. And put the tip of your mechanic's stethoscope either on the hub or the bolt that holds the wheel bearing to the hub. You're going working from the backside, okay, from the axle boot side. And listen to the left front, listen to the right front. How should they sound? If it's not a wheel bearing, how should they sound? The same, right?
Right.
Unless you happen to be the lucky guy that's got two bad wheel bearings. a wheel bearing is, you know what it sounds like? It sounds like this. That's a good wheel bearing. A bad wheel bearing sounds like it's gargling with sand and gravel.
Okay.
All right? And I think you may find that. The only thing I want to close with is, just because, front suspension work, and I just want to just cover the bases, you ever put a blade of grass between your thumb, between your thumbs, and blow through it on a hot summer day? You make that whistle, you make that howl.
Yes.
Do we have a dust shield or a body shield or some sort of spoiler or something out of position that's, as you're driving down the road? But driving it on the lift will tell you a lot. Just make sure it's good and secure. All right, sir?
Very good. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, George. Be safe and let me know what happens. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this.
Don't call us.
That's right. If you call and we're not live, you can leave a message and we'll call you back to get you on the air with Ron. 855-560-9900. Speaking of Ron, here he is.
Hey, let's get on over and talk to John in Mississippi. John, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hi, I wanted to just run something past you. A mechanic told me years ago when you're doing an oil change that before you install the new filter, if it's possible, you should fill it with fresh oil before you put it on. And recently I heard another mechanic say, you shouldn't do that. It'll damage the engine somehow. What is your take on that?
It's not going to damage the engine, John. It's most likely, and in a lot of cases, a matter of it's an issue of time. It's an issue of ability. How does that filter hang? Is it at an angle? Is it possible? Back in the day when oil filters were a quart or a quart and a half of oil, filters used to be much bigger. 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, I'm dating myself, it took a little bit longer for that filter to fill up and then prime the rest of the system. Today, you look at how small oil filters are. I don't do it personally. I'll do it on the hot rod, but the hot rod's got a bigger filter on it and it hangs straight up and down. It's a small block Chevy where, maybe it's a little more critical there, or maybe the distance of time or the length of time it's going to factor. But today, it's not necessarily practical. Are you going to hurt the engine by filling that filter with oil? Absolutely not. It'll just prime a little bit better. Listen, you don't want to hear the stories, okay? I remember, and I'm going way back, but I remember back in the gas station when we had a Roadrunner. So how far back am I going here? A 68 Roadrunner, if I remember right. And the oil pan was getting resealed, and we couldn't get parts. We had the pan down. We needed the bay. And I looked at Billy and I said, come on, we'll push it out. And he said, just drive it out. I said, Billy, there's no oil in it. He said, Ron, we just pulled the pan down. And I'm not suggesting to do this, but just, old school mechanics, this is the way they looked at it. He said, Ron, just we'll just drive it out. We're just going straight back. And we started it up. We pulled it straight back. Because there's oil on the bearing. Would I recommend anybody do that and drive it any length of time? No. Does it happen? Absolutely. Would I tell you to do it on an engine today? No, because things are a little bit more fragile, a little bit more precise today, and I think there's more of an issue. I'm just telling you something that I saw happen more than once as a kid, and it kind of left an impression on me that, could you? Would I? Not really. Not likely. Haven't yet. But I've seen it done. So, you know, probably more important than filling the filter, or just as important as filling the filter in a world of practical perspective, is just changing oil on a consistent basis, using a good grade of oil, using a good filter, and just staying on top of all the rest of the fluids. You know, any particular car in mind here, John, or is he saying specifically to something, or not so specific?
This is just something that I used to work as a service writer back in the early 90s, and I saw a mechanic doing it. I asked him about it, and he said, yeah, it'll get the fresh oil into the engine faster if you fill the filter up. And it made sense to me, so I've been doing it ever since.
Right. You're not going to hurt anything. Oh, and another vehicle that we'll do it on is, let's say like the Ford Power Stroke diesel, where they've got the oil pressure helps with fuel delivery. So it's like the oil system has to be primed in order for the fuel system to work, in order for the vehicle to start. And, you know, a diesel is also a classification of, a high output engine that you want fresh oil up there as fast as possible. So, yeah, we will fill the filter on a diesel, anything diesel. I just happened to think of Ford Excursion because it was, you know, we did one not too long ago, a week and a half ago. So, yeah, listen, you're not hurting anything. You ever notice that if you change the oil on a car and you start it, the red oil light is on, or the gauge reads zero momentarily, and then all of a sudden the light goes out or the gauge picks up?
My car doesn't have a light. Oh, yes, it does, but I didn't have... I guess I did
right. See
that occasionally.
So what you're seeing is the lag time, or the length of time between when the filter fills and primes and then charges the rest of the system. Builds pressure up in the rest of the system. So, you know, if it's a half a second versus a second, or a second versus 2 seconds, always think like this. What does the majority of the industry do? How many legitimate engine failures has the industry seen as a result of not priming an oil filter on the majority of vehicles? Not every vehicle, but the majority of vehicles. You know, I had this conversation once with a mechanic. We were talking about, you know, what weight oil do I put in? What do I do? And we kind of got into a conversation about how critical is it? And, you know, the answer becomes on how much of a consistent basis. How often does the mistake happen? And I'm not promoting mistakes. I'm just trying to take the fear out of working on a car out of people. All right. If you put 530 in, a 530 viscosity oil in where it calls for a 520 short term, one oil change, is that going to kill the engine? Not likely. Now, let's fast forward. In the day and age of stop-start technology, where oil viscosity has become critical, it's not that it's going to hurt the engine. It might affect how well that vehicle starts, especially in cold weather. That might become an issue. So that's... everything's got its specifics. Listen, you keep filling your filter with oil, you'll be fine. And you're not going to hurt anything, believe me. Hey, coming up next, Robbie Green. He's chief engineer from Intercom down around Dallas way. He did a little staying at home, take care of his kid in his car. We're going to talk to him about it. We're coming back right after this. You know, nothing could make me happier when I was a kid than working on a car. And it led me to this point in my life. You know, I don't think there'd be a Ron and Annie in the Car Doctor without tinkering with cars as a kid and all that I did and all that I created unknowingly at that time. So, you know, when I read things like this, Tom Ray is friends with the next gentleman, Robbie Green. He's chief engineer from Intercom down in the Dallas area, and Tom was telling me the story about how Robbie was working on his own vehicle. And I'll tell you what, let's get Robbie up here and let him tell the story. Rob, are you there, sir?
I am, and I have Mason here with me.
Oh, it's a great story in this time and age, right? I take it that you're stuck at home under quarantine, and you were working on your family vehicles, and your son took an interest.
Yeah, well, what actually happened is my my wife's grandmother is staying with us, and she went out to start her car and found out it was dead. It wouldn't start. And we took a look at a few things, realized the battery was 5 years old. And then we obtained the battery and said, I said, hey, kiddo, why don't you come put this battery in with me?
And that sort of lit his fire.
Yeah, he really enjoyed it. Did you have fun?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, what's his name? I didn't realize he was there.
Oh, yeah, his name's Mason.
Hey, Mason, how are you?
Good.
Yeah. Did you enjoy working on the car with Dad?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you gonna do it again sometime?
I don't know.
You don't know? Let me ask you this. What was your favorite part about it, or just working under the hood okay?
Checking the oil.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we checked the oil too. He liked that.
What else did you do with the car? Did Dad show you anything with tires? You got to show him the tires, Dad.
Oh, I do need to show him the tires.
Yeah, you got to show him the penny trick. You know about the Lincoln's head and the penny, and you know, check the tire pressure. So
absolutely,
Mason, are you going to be a mechanic when you get old, like me, or when you grow up?
No.
No. Hey, listen, at least he's honest.
That's not what I want to be.
What do you want to be?
A scientist?
Well, I got news for you. They're going to be one and the same by the time you're 18. So being a mechanic and a scientist will be pretty much the same thing. So, but, you know, that's Rob, that's just a great skill set to possess, because to be able to look at something, you know, take it apart in your mind and then put it together and then go work on it, you know what? That's what you do as a scientist. That's what you do as a mechanic. That's what you do as an engineer. Right, you're working with your mind and your hands. You just tie the two together.
Yep. Well, my dad, Mason's grandfather, is a retired forklift mechanic.
Okay.
So I spent a lot of time around forklift engines, cars, all kinds of stuff with him when I was a kid. And I joke with my old man, you know, that I'm a transmitter mechanic these days. But I always enjoyed learning and being around him, and I think Mason had a lot of fun too.
Well, and that's, you know what, that's really important, and the bond that will be created between father and son for doing this is something that nothing will ever take away. He'll always remember that, and you know, if you can continue it in some way, shape, or form, maybe just take him out and show him how to wash the car next. And, you know, one of the things that working on cars at a young age taught me was if it wasn't mine and I wanted one, I had to work for it, but it taught me to respect it. And, you know, you can't say enough about that. You're respecting other people's property. It's just a great skill set like that, you know?
Yep, absolutely.
So what's next for you two? What are you going to work on next?
Well, he's actually doing some Cub Scout stuff.
Yeah.
So he's actually in the middle of doing a bunch of projects there right now. I don't know.
I just finished.
Oh, you just, yeah, okay.
Do they do the, what was it, the Pinewood Derby?
They do the Pinewood Derby.
They still do the Pinewood Derby.
A Pinewood Derby car.
Yeah, maybe he could build a Pinewood Derby car and teach them about, can you lubricate the wheels?
Did you lubricate the wheels?
What does lubricate mean?
Well, lubricate puts something on them to make them slippery.
Right, yeah. So that the wheels spin faster. Are you allowed to do that?
You are. That in our particular pack, you can.
Powdered graphite.
Oh, you can use powdered graphite. Well,
yep.
I have to tell you, when I was a Cub Scout, I don't know how legal this was, but nobody said to me otherwise. But when I was a Cub Scout, I had forgotten about the. Well, I don't think we were able to lubricate back in those days, but we were able to, for lack of a better way to put it, to spit on the axle, and it was a little wet with the metal against the wood, and it spun a little bit faster, and so you'd see kids on the axle, and it, you know, whose car had better spit. But I guess they changed the rules, because maybe back 35, 40 years ago, what am I kidding, 50 years ago, you know, it wasn't the most sanitary thing in the world to see kids spitting on their Pinewood Derby car.
But you still aren't allowed to use jets.
No, there's no gas.
You can't,
right?
You can't put a jet engine on it.
Right, no. But it's all gravity.
Or even a regular engine.
But you can put weight in it, right? Right, Mason?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you're limited how much weight you can put on.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So 5 ounces.
What color is your car?
Red.
Red. Well, how did I know that? So, do you think the color makes it go faster?
No.
It could, though. It could psych out the other guy and scare him. It could.
What was your car shaped like?
Did it look like
a spear with, kind of like a spear with a little gap, two gaps in the middle?
Maybe we could get a picture up, on the Car Doctor Facebook page. Maybe you guys take a picture of it. And
yeah, we can do that. We'll
send it over to Tom.
No, not right now, Mason.
No, not
right now.
Oh, good gosh. Does he realize where he is, Rob, you think? Does he know this is a national show? It doesn't register.
Well, he knows radio. I actually have some pictures of him in a studio here, but
right.
I don't know if he's fully aware of everything that happens with it.
That's okay. You know what? It's great, and you know, part of my reason to do this was it's great to see a father and son together, especially in these times, and to see a kid take an interest in cars. And I don't care if he grows up to be a scientist, a fireman, a policeman, you know, whatever. I know a lot of people that worked on cars as kids, and it lays a great foundation. So I think it's something we should encourage, working with your hands and your mind together like that. So you're doing a great thing. You really are.
Well, thank you. No, we have a lot of fun, and you know, as he gets older, my old man always involved me in all kinds of projects, and that's my game plan as well.
Well, so. and you know what that does as he gets older. When he has questions and when he has problems, he won't be afraid to come and talk to you because you'll have that bond. So you're really building a big deal here. So
it's a good thing. And I also have to come up with some task comparable to cleaning things out in the parts washing station. I did a lot of that too.
Teach him, get him to wash the car first. Show him how to armor all tires and, you know, clean the bottom half and a little plastic trim and just polish the car by the corner. And I think he'll do just fine. He sounds like a really sharp kid and he's really inquisitive. So you guys will do just great. All right, kiddo.
He is really sharp.
So you have a good rest of the day and thanks for being part of the Car Doctor family this weekend.
Okay, thanks, Ron.
You're very welcome. Bye, Mason. I guess he's gone. Okay. All right, Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, we'll be back right after this. Don't go away.
First gear, it's all right. Second gear, a lean fast. Third gear, hang on tight.
Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor, welcome back. Let's get over to Great Britain and talk to Dr. Richard McCann. Richard, how are you today, sir? Thanks for calling in. What's going on?
Hello, Ron. Great to hear from you again. Can I just say... send love and best wishes to all the car guys in the UK, the US, to stay safe and well at this difficult time. You know, we Brits, we may be a few miles away from you, but we're very close in spirit, Ron.
We're separated by a common language, isn't it? Something like that, as the saying goes.
that's what they say.
Yeah, that's what they say. So how are things in your neck of the woods, Richard?
Well, merry old England isn't quite so merry right now.
Yeah.
We're all in lockdown. Reserved occupations are allowed out. Everyone else is staying in, and we're allowed to go and get food. We have a 6.5 feet distancing thing so that we can only be that close to anybody else in queues and so on. But
right.
So we're getting by.
Right.
We're getting by.
How are the roads?
Not good with you either.
We've been through worse. We'll get through it and we'll be done. One of the things I was talking about in the opening comments, which you'll hear later, I'm sure, is just that it is a great time to get out on the road by yourself and go for a ride because there's nobody on the roads.
Nothing on the road at all.
Nothing on the roads. So it'd be a good time to take one of your cars out for a ride. And
I'm doing it, Ron. Yeah.
Clear the head.
Yeah.
So what are you working on today? What can I help you with?
I've got a 2006 Bentley Continental GT. I've had it a few years. It's the W12, the 6-litre twin turbo. Don't use it every day, but I use it regularly. It's done about 40,000 miles.
Okay.
I keep it well, have it serviced regularly. I put a can of Berry through it every now and then, keep it clean. And it's a very good car, being hugely reliable. But when I start it from cold, Ron, the first, say, 150 yards or so from my house to a junction is a 30-mile-an-hour zone. And it has a, I don't know whether you'd call it a misfire or a bit of a pulse. It has
a surge.
You can just feel this. Yeah, like a flutter.
Right.
Just like a flutter. Now, I've tried increasing the revs. It still does it. It's more engine and revs related than it is speed related. I don't think it's coming from the tires. I'm sure it's coming from the motor. I dropped it into the dealers. It went in for a 4,000-mile oil change and service. They said there are no codes on it at all. So they're not sure what it might be. One of them mentioned fuel filter, but
if it was a fuel filter, then why does it go away warm?
Yeah, thank you, Ron. That's what I thought.
You know, that would be my logic. It's got to be so extreme. Unless, well, now one of the things I would look for is, you know, I would go back and look at fuel trim. I don't think it matters whether it's in Great Britain or the States, but fuel trim is fuel trim. However, a scan tool is going to read it. That car should have OBD2 on it or some level of it. To look at fuel trim. My question is, you come out of the house, you get in the car, do you warm it up at all, or is it just put it in gear and go?
I give it a minute, but I don't leave it idling for a long time. It soon comes up to temperature. Comes up very fast, that car.
Okay.
But if I do warm it up, Ron, it still does the same thing. I think it still does the same thing for that first 150 yards, and then it clears and it's away.
So it seems like it's if you run the car for 10 minutes and leave or 2 minutes and leave, it still does it.
It still does it. And it does first start of the day and will not do it again for the rest of the day. I can leave it, get into it again, and it doesn't do it again. It's that first run of the day.
Okay. Let me pull over and take a pause, Richard, before I run out of time. I don't want to rush through this. We'll finish it up when I come back. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Richard, you're still there, sir.
I'm still here. I don't want to give you any misinformation, Ron. I think it's definitely worse when it's cold.
Okay. So here's what's going on in my mind. My first question is, how long has it been since you filled it up? Is there any chance that that's stale fuel?
No.
Okay. So you drive this enough. You drive this on a pretty consistent basis.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So fuel's out of the way. You know, ask the mechanic what makes him think it's a fuel filter. Is it a blind guess? And see how smart he is.
So.
You know, ask him. Say, listen, you know, wouldn't it show me some sort of a stumble or starving for fuel sensation when it's warm?
Wouldn't it be worse with more power?
Would you think?
Why does it do it on a light throttle? Surely.
Right.
Yeah.
And
pulling more fuel through.
And let's look beyond codes. All right. So there's no codes. Okay. As you've heard me say a dozen times before, you ever been sick and, you know, but you didn't feel great on Monday, you didn't feel great on Tuesday, and Wednesday you finally got the sore throat?
Have something impending.
Right. Is there something impending? Why can't we go look at fuel trim when this is happening? If this is in closed loop, meaning that it's running the driveway for a minute, the computer's seen warm up, the O2 sensor came online, and then it happens? What if we drive, first of all, and then it happens, where's fuel trim? Is fuel trim out of range? Okay, that's number one. Number two, what if we unplug one of the O2 sensors? That would keep the car in open loop. Does the problem not happen? because it's running a fixed program. Does that change or skew things? Last thought, okay? Last thought. Just because there's no fault code, how accurate's the coolant sensor? When I see cars that do funny things when they're cold, and, you know, I got to start to get really judgmental. And obviously, I want you to go through how dirty is the throttle plate. You know, could the mass airflow be dirty? Could we have an issue there? But how accurate's the coolant sensor? Does it seem like it's spot on? 10 degrees will make all the difference in the world. That could cause your problem. Richard, you've got your homework. Call me back next week. I'm Ron Anini, the Car Doctor. Good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.